Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Wolverine 24/7 podcast, your audio source for all things Michigan football, basketball, and recruiting. I'm your host, Zach Shaw. Steve Lorenz here with me, and we're actually living up to the basketball part of that intro this time. It's been a while since we've done a basketball-specific episode. Steve can attest to this. I feel like half the time we were on the phone, I'm like, man, we got to talk about this basketball team. They're going through these epic struggles, but it's almost kind of like watching a slow motion car wreck this season, where it's like, okay, do we talk about it now, or do we wait till the dust settles and it's like, here's another game and another? So it's, anyway, the season's over. They went 8-24, worst record in program history. I have a whole list of stats that basically indicate this is probably the worst season in program history. And not 48 hours after the season ended, Michigan head coach Juwan Howard was fired after 5 seasons leading the Wolverines. So this episode will be a lot about that, more so than, you know, what went into 8-24. It'll be a lot more about the coaching change. We'll talk about what went wrong in the Juwan Howard, once promising Juwan Howard tenure, the biggest lessons learned as it pertains to Michigan and the basketball program moving forward, the most important trait Michigan must look for in its next head coach. And then we'll name a few names, but we're going to pick our first call, if we were in Michigan's shoes, the candidate who makes the most realistic sense, and then a dark horse candidate that we're not ruling out to be Michigan's next head coach. So, Steve, I'm going to let you go first, but, you know, Juwan Howard, we were talking about right before we hit record, there was a moment, I would say, in 2020, 2021, you know, when he had Michigan in the top 5 within his first couple weeks on the job, because he won the battle for Atlantis. And that 2020 season, we never got to see it through. But then the next year, you know, he added some transfers. Franz Wagner had his breakout season. They win the Big Ten, they make the Elite Eight, and it really just looks like he picked up where Beilein left off and almost elevated the program in some ways. And then the past 3 years, they're 45-55, most losses in a 3-year stretch in Michigan basketball history. Granted, it's probably the most games they've played when they're playing more games than they were in the 50s and 60s and things like that. But it's been a little bit of a slide since then, and there were moments where you're thinking, oh, maybe they'll figure it out, maybe they'll have their breakthrough. But then obviously this year it felt like the floor gave out, and they were just in free fall mode the whole season. 9 losses by 15 points or more compared to 8 wins. That's crazy to me. But Steve, your perspective, what was the biggest downfall of Juwan Howard's tenure? What was the biggest reason for this slide from a height? I mean, I think at the time, you know, it felt like Michigan could be in the national championship hunt year after year. And now here they are, kind of the laughingstock of the Big Ten. It's something we could talk about for hours, but you know, what's the biggest thing in your mind that happened to cause this slide?
Boy, biggest thing. It's weird because, you know, you start talking about the early parts of his tenure and you think about the success of some of those teams. And yeah, there was definitely a lot of Beilein's fingerprints still, even on the roster. But I mean, I think of guys like Chaundy Brown, that Juwan brought in, who didn't just play well, but also kind of played with that, what would you call, the first guy in the gym, last guy to leave, like, sort of mentality, right? I mean, so it was like the early teams had good rosters, but also had the right mindset, right focus to play the college game, which is still at this point totally different than the NBA. You know, it takes a totally different type of team, I feel like, to win in college. Still, you know, felt like they had something going. Biggest thing, I think it was, it actually kind of comes back to that, where I think the construction of the roster really, yeah, maybe ended up being his ultimate downfall. I mean, you look at what they have right now, today. You know, again, college basketball, weird, but the one thing is you need elite guard play on both ends of the floor, and you need depth at guard. And Michigan has neither of those at all.
So just to give you a number to help you, because you're dead on, they have 11 scholarship players, which is two less than they could have. But regardless, they have four scholarship players who were not either listed as a power forward out of high school or played power forward this season.
Yeah,
they have
it's
four
crazy.
four
it's
guys
crazy.
Who are like guards effectively.
You know, and no disrespect to a kid like George Washington, let's say, but unless, yeah, if you're going to be shorthanded at guard, then you need big time players in those spots, again, on both sides of the floor. That's the biggest thing. Because Doug is solid on the offensive side. He's not a good defensive player at all. And, you know, you have Llewellyn, who's, you know, I don't know. Is he 100%? Like, it's just like, again, not a guy.
Yeah, he's not what he was.
Probably was, right? So, it's just, you know, to me, I think that's probably been, it's the biggest reason they've struggled the last two seasons, which are why he ultimately lost his job. So I guess that would be the direction I would go. They have a couple guards coming in this recruiting class, but that's still, I don't know if Brooks or Anderson are year one guys to be, you know, themselves.
From a number
right?
standpoint, they probably have to be.
Right. That's the thing
yeah.
Is like, you're, you know, it kind of in a way, you know, it's a little bit different. It does sort of remind me of the Michigan's offensive line like 7 or 8 years ago before they finally got stuff figured out, where you're putting guys in positions that they're not ready for. And it ends up hurting more than helping. You know, it's like, it's like throwing somebody out, like they throwing somebody out in the main stage before they're actually ready to play. And, you know, for them, yeah, now you have George Washington again, who might be, it like, could have been, like, I feel like you talk when, oh, we're obviously going to talk about him more, but a beeline guy where maybe in year two or three would be a guy who'd be ready to make a big impact, which, again, he didn't play a ton, but he was obviously not even close to ready this season, but at the tail end is being put out there, you know, and just, I don't know. I feel like that could be a confidence killer for young guys to go out there when they're not totally ready and just get owned, I guess. That sounds too harsh. But either way, though, to answer the main point is roster construction, to me, definitely, right? And maybe we'll get into it. You know, I know Sam, some great reporting from Sam, as always, about Juwan basically saying NIL was the biggest reason that Michigan was failing under his watch, which, debatable, but, you know, the actual roster is just to me, is the biggest reason why they were not competing at a high level the last two seasons.
Yeah, I think so. I think there's actually even more. I think how do I put this? I think both in high school recruiting and in transfer portal recruiting, I think Juwan Howard and his staff had optimism that at times would hurt them. I think it's great. I'm an optimistic person. I often believe things are going to work out, you know, but to recruit three high caliber transfer portal recruits who had the almost identical, like, credit transfer situation. For those that don't know, Michigan capped how many credits of yours will transfer in order so that you don't just come in and, like, take one semester of classes and get a degree. Not every school does that. I don't know how it works at other schools, but I know at Michigan, I think I don't expect that rule to change. But somehow Michigan basketball recruited three players with, like, the identical, nearly identical situation, got commitments from them, and then were told, okay, this is it. They would get admitted, but they would basically have to go back down a grade. So it's a it's an awkward situation. It's not, I understand that that's out of Michigan basketball coaches' control, but also they were like holding out hope for a long time on a couple of these recruits. And you would see it in high school too, where it's like, okay, this guy hasn't signed his letter of intent. You know, he's talking to pro leagues. He's talking to other schools. I almost feel like Michigan would get optimistic tunnel vision where the, like, this is our guy, we're good. And it's like, well, and you know this from football, you know, a commitment's only a commitment. Lots of things can happen here and there. Like, you have to always, like, kind of have options ready to go if things fall through. Recruits fall through all the time, even at programs that recruit extremely well. It's just kind of it's part of the frenzy. I'm sure it helps our site a little bit just because people are following recruiting. So, I mean, if things happened simple and you know, crazy things never happened, I think people would follow recruiting less. So I think there's just a little bit of this inability to kind of have the foresight to plan ahead and think, okay, you know, I'll start saying names. Caleb Love, he had not graduated from North Carolina. When you find that out, maybe you should have some other guards ready just in case. It's great to take a commitment from him. He's a fantastic player. He was Pac-12 Player of the Year.
That's the problem, right? What's his name from Purdue? Eastern.
Nojel Eastern, yep.
Did they have a backup plan at that point, or didn't they have to kind of scramble there?
That year, I think that it actually worked out because I think Shaundi Brown was
that
coming.
That was Shaundi. Yeah. Okay, yes. Yeah.
So that one, if it happens once, that's fine. And honestly, it happens with football too. You know, they take commitments. They have to be like, I actually, you know, it's – but the second and third time, Terrence Shannon and then Caleb Love, who are fantastic players, I get wanting to try to, like, make things work with them. But, yeah, just by the time Caleb Love decommitted, it was like Michigan was scrambling, trying to, like, get up to – I think at the time they had 9 scholarship players, and it's like you got to be more on board. Like, you had to know starting in December or January that Jet Howard and Kobe Bufkin could leave. Hunter Dickinson, if you're blindsided by that, I get it. But, you know, yeah, they just – a one-man recruiting class when you had that many departures, it just – I felt like it was evident to me that Michigan was going to be bad this year.
So I know
8-24 surprises me, but I knew they weren't going to be good this year. Go ahead.
I know he went early, but was Buff? I mean, earlier than I think we maybe than I anticipated. I don't know about you, but you don't think Bufkin leaving was a little bit of a surprise, or did his strong play at the tail end of last season kind of cement that it was probably something that they should.
I think you could call it a surprise, but
either way, I guess it doesn't.
Recruiting,
yeah,
I think
doesn't
that's
change
the lack
the
of foresight, because he was a McDonald's All-American.
True.
Michigan was singing to the rafters about all the work he had put in between his freshman and sophomore year and how much better he was going to be. You don't necessarily like take his spot and say like, oh, he's gone. But you have to know, looking at last year's roster, including the players, there were other players who transferred who just were not factoring into the depth chart at all. Like, you have to, in my opinion, a one-man recruiting class is just a lack of foresight. And I know they lost one, Papakonte, to I think, academics as well. Although that one was also, you know, there was chatter about it 3 months before it happened. So I guess in my head, I think, I don't know if it was loyalty to the players that were committed. I don't know what it was, but it seemed like Michigan did not have that plan B ready to go. And I think more importantly, other programs do, or they have the money to throw an NIL deal at someone and make it happen. And Michigan doesn't have that. And you can say, oh, that's the big problem. And maybe it is, but there are other programs around the Big Ten, around the country, that don't even have Michigan's level of NIL, and they're doing pretty well. You can be successful without buying all your recruits in college basketball still. And I think that's
the big thing, right? Because that, like, you're seeing it play out right now, going into the tourney, right? I mean, again, you have your big dogs that are always, like, you know, North Carolina, Kentucky, et cetera, but college basketball has always been such a different animal, where It's weird because doing the recruiting side of things, it's always kind of actually felt like as dirty as football recruiting can be or is. It's kind of always felt like at the top levels that college basketball recruiting is way dirtier, like slimier. But the ironic thing is, it is not a situation like in football where Ross like a talent accumulation is at least going to get you in the conversation at the end of the year, most likely, right? I mean, you talk about Georgia, Ohio State, Alabama, et cetera, et cetera. College basketball, totally different, where it can get you in the conversation, but it's not a guarantee. You know, and that's what was always so ironic to me. So yeah, to say, you know, that's the thing where like you'd start talking about NIL is like, does it, of course it matters, but at least with this Michigan program and the product that we were seeing on the floor for the last, especially the last like, yeah, like 3 weeks or so, month, not probably not even a top three or four issue, right? You know,
Yeah.
as much of a problem as it as that as you could argue it may
There
have
were
been,
on-court
or
issues for
there,
sure. The
right?
defensive numbers are insane. They were one of the worst defense. I mean, they were the worst defense in the Big Ten by quite a bit. They were
By a
one of the
long
worst
shot.
defenses in high major basketball,
Yeah,
which is
wow.
surprising because I guess I'll admit I didn't watch a ton of Juwan Howard's career, but I thought defense was always kind of like
No, don't, dude. He was sort of the how you say it? He was sort of the enforcer of that group, but also obviously very talented. Like that kind of makes it sound like he was just a bruiser. I mean, he was a great player, like
Yeah,
could
oh,
do it
for
all,
sure.
but was also kind of the, I would say like the tone setter. You know, maybe Jalen in the backcourt, obviously, but as far as like anywhere inside the in the key inside, you know, below the basket, like he was the enforcer, tone setter for that. For those teams back then. So,
And in the NBA, he made one All-Star team, but he played 19 years in the NBA and was immediately hired by a championship caliber program as an assistant. I feel like you don't play that long in the NBA, unless you're like a true, genuine, like crazy good all-star or a really smart, high IQ defender, you know, and someone who really understands like the intangible parts of the game as well. So very surprising to see the defensive slide. I by the way, for those who want more on this, I wrote a like 4,000 word story on how Michigan went from first to worst. So I have a lot of opinions, and if I talked about all of them, this would be like a 6-hour episode.
Yeah, no, very,
But
hey,
the defense.
by the way, very worth read. I'm reinforced, very worth reading. Like I read it. It's
Thank
really
you.
good
Thank
stuff.
you.
No, very
I
good
think
stuff.
what I heard most from readers that liked it was that it wasn't just, oh, they
It's
stunk.
facts.
You know, it was
No,
like
it's facts, dude.
it
Like
zoomed out and
it's
it looked at that there were warning signs, even when they made
yeah.
the Sweet 16 in 2022, that this was at least a program that was not operating at full capacity. Like it wasn't just this year, although in the record books, it looks like it was just this year. It really was a 3-year slide. I think the late game stuff, I just mind blowing, Steve. They were 5-18 in the last 2 years in games decided by 6 points or less.
Ugh. I mean,
I mean, if they're going 18-5, we're probably talking about what in this podcast, what seed they're going to be in the tournament.
yes. Oh, for sure.
Maybe not, actually, maybe not this year, but last year they certainly make the tournament.
Right.
You know, like if you flip it. So I think there were some things.
It's funny because you say 5-18, that's what, 23 games? That's a lot of games. But at points you would see it and you'd be like, you know, you do kind of do that whole, I don't know, sort of the way the cookie crumbles, but after a while you would actually tangibly just kind of see, you know, it's like they almost like they would
Dude, I went back and
they would
looked.
kind of crap the bed, like
Yes.
it, right? It was like it would
It'd
almost be
be
like
20 seconds of one guy dribbling, and then it was like they forgot what the play was called.
yeah, no, it was
It was
very.
strange. And then they'd like chuck up, you know, a contested three, like it's like tipped or whatever. It was just
Yeah.
it every game's a
Even
little different, but yeah.
just passing the, like even just not even the actual, like, let's say play call, but just the literal execution from beginning to end in the last, like, couple, anytime, I guess what you'd call, like, like high intensity, like, situations, I guess. It was literally watching, feeling like you were watching somebody walk on eggshells. You know, that's obviously a phrase, but it was like you could actually feel the tension from them on the offensive side. Defensive side, different. Defensive is like a lot about effort and et cetera, et cetera. But at least when, like, they had to get baskets late, it was like almost painful.
Yeah, you don't want to sense how nervous a team is.
Yes, you know, and
that's hard. We couldn't do it. I get it. Fans get nervous and stuff too. But yeah, if you're watching your college basketball team, you don't want to be seeing visible nerves, you know, when they're blowing a lead. And I will say, you know, addition to late games this year, Steve, this stat blows my mind. They had a lead at halftime in 16 games this year. Literally half their games, they had a lead at halftime. And they were 8-8 when they led at halftime. Like, yeah,
that's the running. That was the big joke. That was the running joke all season too.
Yeah, before the bottom totally fell out. It was like, yeah, they were like, yeah, they would play it. And then as soon as the other team made their adjustments at halftime, yes, it just seemed like Michigan either was not ready for those adjustments or.
So the polar opposite of the football program.
Yeah. Yeah. Right? Kind of.
I mean,
which
Michigan football was the best third quarter team in his,
well, like, last year they had those historically good halves, yeah,
right.
So
what, Florida, we're going back to like non-conference, though, was like what, Oregon, Florida, like they had those games, you know, and it was just like at that point you're
Rutgers,
like,
there's a bunch,
so we're watching,
and if
them,
they win those games, they probably don't, I'm not gonna say the players still gave up, but like you can sense that the team was not playing for anything.
You do get to hear, you do with them, you got the opposite of what, like I said, with the foot, like you did get that almost, honestly, you talk about football, maybe kind of like early Harbaugh against Ohio State. You get that, here we go again.
Okay. Type thing. Yeah. Yeah. Do you know, have where that, like, second push? And yes, a lot of teams don't. Yeah.
Right. And I think as the season wore on, and you saw teams start to just kind of, figure stuff out in the second half. You did for this team, you could tangibly really just kind of see the give up, you know.
But also a lack of depth, 11 scholarship players, we mentioned four guards. Only one guy really, I would say, like, would play center on other teams. You could just sense, especially evident at guard, where it's like before the suspension, I mean, they couldn't take Doug out of the game. Wasn't it Illinois? They took him out for like a minute and a half, and Illinois went on a 10-0 run, and then the game was over. It was like that was like a back and forth game. And
which, again, you're talking about a player who, again, super talented on the offensive side, and a guy who, if he would be even more dangerous, I feel like, if he wasn't the number one option, right? Because he eventually was put in a position where he was really having to try hard to create baskets just to get some points on the board. But also, like you said, they're relying on him so much, but was still such a minus on the defensive end of the floor. You're right. And you're not just having, but running him, not into the ground. I mean, he's a young kid. He can play. But you're still talking, throughout the course of a 40-minute game, it does. It goes back to it.
Other teams have more depth. I remember when before Michigan was just getting blown out in every game. One of the stats that always jumped out to me was like the bench points, and it would be like 31-6, or it'd be like 24-8. Like it was like every game they would lose by 20 plus in the bench points. And so, not only were they low on scholarship players, but the guys who weren't in the starting lineup just were not guys who could consistently, like, I think back to that 2018 team, guys who came off the bench, it was like Eli Brooks, Jordan Poole, Duncan Robinson, you know, John Teske. I'm missing one guy. I don't mean to, but like, you know, that was a team where like their backups could come in and probably be a tournament caliber team. This team just did not, have the depth. And I will say, I forgot to mention this earlier, Juwan Howard, great recruiter. I think you and I would agree on that. You know, his ability to connect with and build relationships with top 50 recruits was evident. I don't know if he and his staff ever had a true hit evaluating a lower rated recruit. And unless you're Kentucky, so North Carolina, opposite, or Duke,
right?
Yes.
Of what built Michigan of B-line. From, yeah.
Yes. So unless you were Kentucky, North Carolina, or Duke, or Kansas, you know the main programs, unless you're one of those teams, you have to be able to like find some what I would call four-year guys, guys who are not rated in the top 50 or 60, who play for 4 years, get better each year. By the time they're seniors or juniors, they're looking like all conference, you know, glue guys. And the closest they got, I went back and looked, it's Terrence Williams.
Okay. So you don't like, I mean, so not to counter your argument, because I think I agree. I kind of feel like Cheddar sort of fits that.
Well, he can, like, but I
do not quite Michigan, a high enough level player. I mean, he's never going to be
win
your
a
main,
game because of him.
Right. He's never going to be your main guy. I guess my thought is when I think of like B-line's teams, I feel like he would have been that perfect like sixth or seventh guy.
Yeah, I hear what
on
you're
the
saying.
Roster, right?
And that's not a diss on Cheddar. Maybe
not at all. No, dude, those guys, dude, his B-line's sixth and seventh guys. There's a couple of them still playing in the league right now. I mean, it you know, I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, B-line was exceptional. I don't think it's fair to compare any coach to B-line in terms of finding lower rated recruits and turning them into first round picks. I mean, it's insane. He had, I think, 8 draft picks who were not top 60 recruits. Might have been even more than that. And that's not counting Duncan Robinson, who went undrafted. So it's, you know, he's obviously like the gold standard, but Michigan, I think I included the list in my story, but yeah, it was like 7 recruits. I think it was like 10 recruits, not in the top 60, and Terrence Williams is the only one to have a career point per game average above 5.0 points per game. And like, he just, it's to land a couple 5-stars, but a lot of times they're only going to be around a year or two, even if they aren't all Americans. Like, it's just the NBA teams are aware of who these players are. You know, they're aware of the potential. So
are we arguing that the team that had Musa, Houston, like, did that team live up to expectations then? I mean,
they were like a barrel. They made the Sweet 16. But they barely made the tournament.
Right.
They were like one game away from not.
Sure. Because that had what I would call a really good mix of talent. And I mean, Caleb Houston has had a better pro career than he
has.
Has
he? Okay.
Well, he's active on, I feel like he's been active on Orlando's roster all season. I feel like he's a contributor, you know, because he was wasn't he kind of a guy that we looked at as sort of a, I want like a, maybe a little bit of a disappointment relative to his, because he was a 5-star. I mean, he was, and he's been active on Orlando, who's solid. Actually, Orlando kind of
he's averaging 4.3 points per game,
but
and he's only played in 50 games this year. I mean,
yeah, but you've only played in 50 games. So I don't know. Also, Orlando, if you're a Michigan basketball fan, that should be your like favorite team, because they have like 4 or 5 guys from Michigan basketball on their team. But
hey, I guess
me being on an active roster is success.
I would not say that's a better career than he had at Michigan, though.
Yeah.
Anyway, whatever. we can pick, but I think we both agree, and I think we should pivot to topic number 2 on this episode. The biggest lesson learned as it pertains to Michigan's future. And I'm going to actually combine this with, in my opinion, the most important trait Michigan must look for in its next head coach. I think, to me, what Juwan Howard's tenure showed is that Michigan is never going to be able to unilaterally recruit its way to championship contention. And maybe I'm proven wrong. Maybe people can disagree with me. That's fine. But having covered B-line, having covered Juwan Howard, I think it's evident to me, you can cite NIL, you can cite the academics, but I think ultimately it's just the way the Big Ten is. If you have a team of like NBA caliber one and duns or two and done players, you know, it's going to be hard to consistently contend. You might have a Trey Burke or someone, you know, who kind of can lead you through the grind that is the Big Ten. Because I think the difference between the Big Ten and other conferences, I don't know if it's the best conference in college basketball, but I will say this, there isn't a night off in the Big Ten. I think the SEC, I think there's a couple, I guess this year Michigan was the closest thing to a night off, but even they had like halftime leads and a fan base that for half the season showed up. But, you know, in the SEC, I think there's usually three or four programs like that that you can kind of like, all right, that's fine. And I think the Pac-12, there are a few programs that just, yeah, you kind of proverbially had the night off. ACC, I think it happens here and there. I think the Big Ten's a little bit more of a grind. And so you need those veterans. You need the depth. You need guys who commit to defense. You need guys who can play physical. You need guys who, when the game is close, they're not, you know, they're rising to the occasion, not, you know, kind of skittish and not quite sure what to do. And I think in order to build a team that can contend in the Big Ten, I think you need a true, like, master of the college game. Because, Steve, I don't know, maybe tell me if you agree. I think Juwan Howard would actually be a more successful NBA head coach than a college head coach. I felt that way for a couple years.
So I think I agree, but it's funny is, like, I don't exactly know why. Does that make sense?
Well, here's how I
think,
put it.
I think I agree. I can't formulate the argument, I guess.
Juwan has a lot of strengths as a coach. I think a lot of them are in how he relates to people. He's
relatability.
A great
yeah.
mentor.
Yep.
Great, yeah. Very relatable, highly encouraging. Like this was something that players have talked about. It's like some coaches try to like break you down or you know, they try to like humble you. And Juwan would do that for sure. But I think he would do it in a way where you're still excited. You know, you like him, you want to play for him. And I think, you know, that 2021 team, I think the biggest hallmark of that team was the buy-in. You know, they really loved their coach. They wanted to play hard. They wanted to win. You know, it was a very, very talented team. But also, I think the buy-in was just exceptional with that particular roster. And I think that, you know, I know it didn't show this year. I still think that there was a very much a family energy with Juwan Howard and the players. So I think he's great at, you know, managing egos. I think he's great at making sure people are, you know, the players are happy and healthy and you kind of, you know, in the right mental headspace. And ultimately, he knows a lot about basketball. So I think in an NBA situation, I actually think, you know, I've always said NBA coaches, you almost need them to be like CEOs, like clap it up, you know, manage the egos, put guys in the right position to be successful, things like that. Whereas like college game, you also have to manage your roster, like put together, literally construct your roster. You have to put together the logistics of your practice and your recruiting, you know, you're putting together everyone's calendars. You know, you're doing so many things off the court that I almost joke, like, for to be successful in college basketball, you almost need to be like an overworked accountant. Like you're just, it's so much extra stuff. It's less about, I mean, you know, all those strengths that Juwan Howard has did have value in Michigan's program, but there was so much that they were not succeeding in, that were not strengths of his. And I think one of the bigger what ifs is, what if Juwan Howard had said, hey, I need a GM. I need someone who's in charge of portal recruiting evaluations, you know, kind of putting all these plans in place, and I can go recruit, but the logistical side of things and the planning ahead, the drumming up NIL, you know, kind of managing all that stuff. Like I do kind of wonder, what if he had said 2 years ago, hey, I'm happy to recruit it. I'm not being lazy. Cause I would never say he was lazy, but I need a GM. I need someone to like kind of help with the oversight of this stuff. And so I think to me, the biggest priority Michigan must have is, I think they need someone who has a lot of college experience, and particularly in a program that is either high major from a conference standpoint or has kind of been in that frenzy that is college. Because it's hard Steve, we could not handle this. I'm good where I'm at in terms of, like, you know, you think about how hard it is to put together a roster in college basketball, because I know football has a lot of transfers and there's a lot of recruiting. Basketball, it feels like every team in the country has like seven newcomers every year now. You know, I guess Michigan State has somehow avoided that level of frenzy, but pretty much everyone else in the Big Ten in the last 2 years has had at least one offseason where they like kind of had to reset the whole roster. So it's not an easy task. I do think Michigan would be wise, no matter who they hire, to hire a GM. But I think the most important trait, in my opinion, is not just experience like coaching in college, but like managing rosters, managing all of that, because it's a lot more than what is asked of an NBA coach. You know,
So
NBA coaches.
someone who's immersed themselves in the current college basketball atmosphere, right?
Yes.
Pretty
And not
much.
just that, but has experience doing what I would say more with less, quote unquote,
Sure.
more with less. Like they're aware, you know, because it's great, good for Kentucky, good for UNC, good for Duke, good for Kansas, you know, some of those top programs. That's great that they can accumulate talent. But a lot of times in the NCAA tournament, the teams that are beating them have a bunch of, you know, well-identified three stars who ended up blossoming into All-Americans. So they have, I mean, really, frankly, it was a lot of beeline looking teams, you know, teams that aren't as talented, aren't as big, aren't as athletic as maybe some of the blue bloods, so to speak, but they understand how to, you know, they're efficient on the recruiting trail. They're not offering 37 top 40 recruits and only getting commitments from two of them over a 3 year stretch, which Michigan did over the past three cycles. And I think, you know, programs that or coaches that know how to do more with less, have experience doing more with less, and understand that Michigan will recruit fine, right? Michigan will recruit just fine. Like they'll get four stars, they'll get top 50 recruits, but they're never going to be able to win solely based on recruiting. If you can recruit a five star, great. You know, maybe that can be, you know, the straw that stirs the drink or something like that. But you're gonna need 3 and 4 year players, some 5 year players, you know, guys who were lower rated recruits, aren't necessarily on NBA draft boards, but can be successful at the college level. To me, that was kind of my biggest lesson learned from the Juwan Howard tenure, because I think he was a great recruiter. I think he was a very personable. Players really liked him. You know, heard that from guys who played for Beeline, heard that from guys who didn't play for Beeline. There's definitely a lot of love for Juwan Howard. But I think the, I don't know if he, we'll never know, because he was very much, it seemed like he very much felt like he should be able to recruit as well as anyone in the country. But I do kind of wonder if he had like leaned into like, hey, our sweet spot recruit wise is like guys rated 50 to 100. I do kind of wonder what that looks like, because then he has guys who are seniors right now, juniors and seniors, you know, they're not going through the grad transfer or getting grad transfers to like add experience to the roster. I mean, they have guys who are ready, because how many Big Ten teams, Steve, over the past decade or so are led by these like juniors and seniors who like had very humble freshman and sophomore years. I mean, Michigan State, it seems like all their best teams in my lifetime, it's been like a couple seniors who like a Denzel Valentine who you know, played maybe as a freshman and sophomore, but really blossomed. You know, I think Illinois's had a couple players like that. I think yeah, I mean, I you know, we could dig into this for a while, but that was my biggest takeaway, I guess, from the Juwan Howard. What went wrong with the Juwan Howard tenure was for Michigan to be successful, they don't have to do more with less, but they have to have that efficiency, have that mindset that they're not going to necessarily out recruit you, but they might out develop you, outwork you, out hustle you, and at the end of the day, grow into like a connected team that kind of looks again like the Beeline teams. He was probably the gold standard at finding, you know, underrated talent in recruiting. And I think Michigan needs a little bit of that to be successful moving forward. Your thoughts, your biggest takeaway either from the Juwan Howard tenure or what Michigan should be targeting in its next head coach?
I think Michigan should target someone who will win them basketball games.
Nice.
That so that's yep, and that's it. I'm done. No, again, I think basketball has always, but just the college game, college athletics in general have just changed so much in the last 5 years that, yeah, it has to be somebody who is comfortable in that sort of chaotic, again, because it is, it's less about the actual game than it's ever been. And yeah, so you need it is paramount for it to be somebody who's comfortable in that situation. So with that in mind, I don't know if you and we'll discuss some guys, but I don't know if that means that you want to lean more towards an up and comer, than an established type. But it is, we've seen it, and I know. So actually, I saw our national guys try to kind of poo-poo it, but there are more and more assistants in football for sure that are leaving for the NFL because they don't want to deal with the crap that the
Yeah.
college game brings, right?
I
And
think I think it balances that because some guys come back, but like the guys who come back probably aren't
by choice,
always choosing to,
right?
unless it's like a
Yes.
pay raise. Like they're
No,
never, yeah.
absolutely. The ones that are leaving are. Well, of course, I mean they're good coaches because they're obviously moving up to the pros, but it's a lot of them. I mean, I look at a guy like Jay Harbaugh. He could have easily moved up the ladder in the college game, like no problem. And then but chooses to just be a special teams, not just be a special teams coach at the pro level just because you don't want to deal with the
Well, I think
crap.
the important thing is these
Right,
coaches
easy
are
peasy.
saying we don't want to deal with this crap.
Right, no, but and that's
You know,
right.
that's what they're
So
saying.
to run, to run a college, a whole college basketball program, you wonder, and again, time will tell. We'll see what programs, because again, like you said, we talk about there are exceptions to the rules as far as there are programs that are just going to win. It's just almost inevitable, right? You talk about North Carolina, Kentucky, Duke, Kansas. Like those are programs that not no matter who they get, but just those programs are always going to attract a good enough roster that you're, again, at least going to be in the conversation. Probably Michigan State too. You get you talk like not Illinois. Yeah, still haven't made a Sweet 16 since like D Brown was around, but yeah, so for Michigan right now, I just, what will they attract? But if you had your pick of the litter, do you go with, yeah, an established guy? I mean, let me ask you. I mean, let's just, is it as simple as, and again, it's not going to happen ever, but just theoretically, just to kind of make the point, if you, let's say you called Jay Wright. And he picked up, and you had that opportunity. What is that? I mean, maybe he's the exception to the rule where you just say, yes, we're taking Jay Wright no matter
Yeah, I don't
what.
think you ever say no.
Right? But I just like a guy, like somebody in that sort of level who's had a high level of success, but maybe hasn't done it in this college basketball atmosphere. Do you go that route if it's there, or do you? I think that's kind of the conundrum
Yeah.
for Michigan, where it's like, again, because like I said, the game has changed so much in the last, five. Well, dude, I mean, here we're gonna talk about John Beilein. It's the reason he left in the beginning. It was part of the reason that he got out when he did was because of the way the game was, the recruiting and the way the game was kind of changing, right? To an extent.
Yeah, to
So.
some degree. Here, I'm going
Right.
to pause you right there because we do need to take our quick ad break. On the other side, we'll talk about what's next for Michigan, who they should target for coaches, including our picks for first call, our pick for realistic name that makes the most sense, and a dark horse candidate we would not rule out. You're listening to the Wolverine 24/7 podcast.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
So, Steve, sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off. I didn't want to get that, but because I felt the conversation was shifting. Continue with your thought.
I don't know. No, I'm kidding. All that for me to be like, yeah, I don't even really remember. No, I just, like I said, I just think that's the big takeaway with what's next is
they need to be a master of today's roster building,
right? It's like a fork. It is kind of a fork in the road because Michigan should be able to attract candidates on both ends, guys who are already established or whatever, and maybe guys who are established but aren't established in today's college basketball. And then you go the other route, and of course you're going to get an up-and-comer or somebody who, you know, is at least looks like they're on their way to being somebody who will thrive at a big-time college basketball program. So what direction do you go? The more we talk it out, the more I actually lean that way, the up-and-comer, just because of the current build of Michigan. Michigan's roster needs a total overhaul, right? So, you know, I don't know how easily...
If you can keep Doug and Terrace Reed, actually, I think sure. You need three starter caliber pieces, and then like
are we expecting Doug pieces. Back though? Isn't he like the closest with Juwan? Like, don't we kind of just again not
you factor in that he had kind of an awkward academic situation with Michigan.
Yes.
I don't know.
I'm
a big believer. I don't like to speculate into players who will transfer and who will not. I think that's a quick way to get those. I don't know. It rarely benefits the player.
I agree.
Maybe now a little bit with NIL, but that's not something I can speculate on. But to your point, they won 8 games this year. Whoever comes in is not, you know, they can walk in with expectations, but I think it's going to be, whether it's a quick build or a long build, it's going to be a build. So I think that, yeah, there's two directions to go. I think personally, I want someone who's proven it as a head coach. I want someone who, in my opinion,
define prove it.
So multiple schools,
okay,
with multiple seasons of success.
Sure.
That's not meant to be such a pointed dig at Dusty May, who I think has only been at one job. Like, I think he would qualify as an up and comer. Me, I would go a more proven. And maybe all of these candidates are unrealistic, whatever. I think it's hard to tell how much allure the Michigan job will have, because I think in some ways it's extremely alluring because you get a little bit longer leash because the boosters are more focused on football. But at the same time that the boosters are more focused on football now means recruiting might be a grind too. So it's a football school, but there has been a lot of recent basketball success. I think the, you know, Beeline kind of showed, and Juwan Howard did too, that when the success is there, you know, the building will be full. When the success is not there, the building will not be full. Like, it's kind of it's not the best job in the Big Ten. It's not, I don't even know if it's a top 3 or 4 or 5 job in the Big Ten, but it's also not like the worst job in the Big Ten either. So I think it will attract some candidates some coaching candidates will say, nope, need to be able to recruit more easily, need to be able to have, you know, more funding and resources ready to go. But I think a coach who understands the build and wants to be kind of the same thing that Beilein had. You know, he came in and he had a probably a longer leash than even he would say he probably should have had. But then by the end, you know, at this point, I almost expect them to name the court after him because of the way he's highly acclaimed. So curious who will pick up the phone when Michigan calls. But if I were in Michigan's shoes, my first call is Tony Bennett out of Virginia. I think if you are looking for the next Beilein, I think that's him. You know, he's been successful at UVA. He won the national title in 2019. And I think his success has been more than just like one wave. You know, he's had multiple waves where, I mean, you could argue Virginia's been, who had no history before Bennett, really. You could argue they've been a top three ACC program over the past decade. I mean, he's got, you know, this year, I think they're what, 22-9, and that's like considered a down year for them. So yeah, won the national title, has like 5 30 win seasons in his career. And he's only making $4 million a year, but I will say, you know, Michigan could match $4 million, but he turned down a raise. Thinking of next Beilein, he turned down a raise and said, put that money toward the program and helping grow the program. I don't need the money, the program does. But he's got Midwest ties. He's from Wisconsin. Dad was a pretty good coach in Wisconsin. You know, I don't know if he's interested, but Steve, in my mind, Michigan would be remiss not to at least call and see, because, you know, the Big Ten's got a lot of money. It seems
yes, that's
like
the conference stability. Yes.
That ACC was one thing. Seems a little unstable. And,
yep.
You know, I think it's fair for Bennett to wonder if he has kind of hit the ceiling at Virginia, because they probably have more academic constraints than Michigan. And I think that they have a smaller fan base, a very passionate fan base, I will say. This is not, I have high respect for Virginia's fan base, but it just, I don't know. Maybe he's thinking that. He probably will never say it, but maybe he's thinking that. And so if I'm Michigan, you know, if I'm looking at okay, who's a John Beilein kind of coach who we could realistically, if I'm Michigan, outbid for, provide maybe a slight upgrade in resources and a change of scenery, my first call is Tony Bennett. Steve, I know we've talked about a few candidates before we hit record. If you were Michigan's athletic director, who is your first call?
We talked about this, and I think I agree. We're talking about first phone call, which, because some people will hear Tony Bennett and they'll roll their eyes and say, well, that's not going to happen. But that's why we say first phone call, because that would be sort of your white whale, right? The coup, if you could pull that off. But you don't, what is it? You don't, or you miss 100% of the shots you don't take, quote,
yeah,
Wayne yep. Gretzky, quote, Michael Scott.
Michael
right?
Scott,
like
yeah.
Yeah. So honestly, the one thing that's kind of funny though, when you say Tony Bennett, is like, he'd be such a good fit in the Big Ten. I don't even know what that means anymore, because there's like 20 teams in the conference, but.
That's true, but he, but no, I guess what I, he's good at, I, three-point I shooting, I defense.
No, he's,
you know, he doesn't need five stars to win.
You think of his dad. You think of Wisconsin, yeah. Right? I mean, that's, you know, so no, I it's sort of, that was like half in jest, but I think I actually think we'd be in agreement there. I think, you know, he fits like I said, I sort of was leaning towards up and comer, but Bennett does fit the mold of a guy who's had majors. He's actually almost like a similar, what we're talking about with Jay Wright, except he just never left the game. As a guy who's had major success, but with Bennett, he's still in the college game, so he understands.
And he's only 54. It's not like this is
yes.
some yep. you know guy right. who's like 3 years from retirement. Like you would yep. he would be eyeing a tenure at Michigan, yes. not like a pit stop.
Yep. No, I think we're in agreement. I think that would be the first call, because I also believe, and I don't know, I know some of the other guys that have been mentioned. So the Iowa State guy, complicated last name.
TJO, let's call him that.
Yep, massive buyout, right? Like, I don't know if Bennett has that, right? Like, I feel like
I don't think it's massive. I mean, they've done their job in backing up the money and making sure that, I mean, you know, $4 million is not it's more than Juwan was making. It's more than John Beilein was making, but it's also not an unfathomable amount of money. And again, right. if he is hearing that the ACC might get blown up,
which is not a contrived,
yeah, it's not fake
viewpoint, right? No, I mean that it's something. It's feasible, right? So, yeah, no, if you're right now, I mean, if you're a coach in any sport, you know, Big Ten and SEC, like those are the two, like you want to be a part of one of those two conferences if you can be, right? I mean, so that's actually kind of one of the wild cards as far as like the attractiveness of the job. I mean, because not only are you not only talking about being in the Big Ten as far as like stability goes, but I mean, you're talking about one of the, probably the, even with the expansion, the two or three top program, like one of the two or three most prestigious programs within said conference. So, you know, that's one of those things that, I mean, people will probably talk about it, but it might be a little bit of a bigger factor than people maybe realize. Right.
It's worth a call. Yes, I think we 100%. Could, yeah.
Dude,
he
I
might
mean,
laugh
that's
in War Emanuel's face, but that's a risk you got to take.
Exactly. That's like, but that's the point is it, that's a, it's a call. You have to put it, like put in the effort to, and see like what's the worst that's going to happen is the status quo. And you just move down the list. But as far as like, yeah, like I said, that's sort of your white whale. That's sort of the guy you shoot for. And if it works out, it does. If it doesn't, it doesn't. So, but I think
anyone
we're in
else
agreement
in that first call tier for you?
I mean, honestly, again, I think you at least put feelers out to see what Jay Wright is thinking, just because, again, I think he breaks the argument. Like, he supersedes the argument about the up-and-comer, right? I think those are probably the two-ish semi, again, not realistic necessarily, but, like, the two guys that might pick up the phone between Bennett and Jay Wright who kind of supersede the up-and-comer argument that I've sort of made. So yeah, no, I think he would be the other guy. We're still going to talk about Beilein, right? I just don't know if he's the, is he in the first call conversation? I'm not sure.
So yeah, let's have Beilein be a separate tier. Cause he is kind of it's an interesting dynamic because there's been multiple reporters who I would trust. And I would consider plugged in who have reported that Beilein is at the very least open to hearing what Michigan has to say. Now, you know, I think he is a coach that would have the clout and be in the situation where he would say certain things need to be in place. And I think if I'm Michigan, I do kind of want to hear one, what on earth happened with the Cavs job? I mean, I've heard other sides of the story, but like, what's his side of the story? And two, you know, how is he's seen how the college game has changed. Recruiting was never his strong point, and he was known as kind of an over planner, micromanager type. Like, is he going to be able to like let a GM kind of handle this? Because otherwise he's working 80 hours a week, 52 weeks a year, because it is a more year round job now than it used to be. And he's 70 years old, I believe. So if I'm Michigan, I do kind of want to hear like, okay, you know, how are you adapting to this college game? But, and if you're Beilein, you probably want to hear what is Michigan going to do to help make this not a difficult job? Cause I will say this, I think Michigan can be a very rewarding job. I don't think any successful coach at Michigan for football, basketball, pretty much everything, but hockey would ever describe it as an easy job just cause there are going to be obstacles. They're not barriers, but they are obstacles that you have to overcome, whether it's recruiting, talent acquisition, transfer portal, geography can set you back, not so much in basketball, but in other sports. So yeah, I think it, I don't know if that's my first call if I'm Michigan. I do, and I as a reporter, I really enjoyed covering Beilein's teams, and I enjoyed, you know, my many conversations with him, but I think I'd wait a beat. I think I'd see if there's other coaches that could do it, but I'm also not keeping that line closed. Like if Beilein's calling and has an idea or has a proposal or wants to make his pitch, I don't think you say, hold on, John, we got to talk to other people. But Steve, I think you're a little bit more bullish on the potential of bringing John Beilein back. I mean, I did a story, five traits Michigan's next head coach must possess. And he had four of them to a T. Experience right. Coaching college, Midwest connection. Doing more with less. Go ahead.
So what's the argument against? Four or five is pretty, that, you know.
Five years away from college basketball.
Right, right.
He's going to be
70. It's what, fine.
50
it's,
years. Yeah. No shade to 7-year-olds, but that is old to hire a coach who's at the beginning of the tenure. Like if it's Boeheim and he's, or Coach K or Nick Saban, and they're kind of like just riding the momentum, that's fine. But you know, this is
a rebuild, right? I mean, are we right?
It is,
I mean,
we're at kind least of... a rebuild. It could be a 1-year, 2-year rebuild. Sure. I don't think this is like quite as 8-24 as the record looks like. I think they're, you know, it's someone who puts together a 13.
Well, like you said, they were
man
what?
Scholarship roster.
Tied her ahead.
Positions.
Yeah. No, I mean, no, you said they're, you're talking about a team, like you said, tied her ahead at how many, at halftime and how many games, right? I mean, that's kind of the weird, another little weird wrinkle in this is that it, 8-24 is, they're not, I just look at, honestly, I see the defensive numbers and think, you know, how much of defense is effort. And that if there's a tangible argument that they gave up, that the players were giving up, it would be like, it would just be not just that they were bad defensively, but to that level makes
it
look like a total.
If a report came out that the players gave up starting December 16th or starting around, like that Florida loss was kind of the give up point. I'm not saying they did, but if a report came out that they did,
we would
and that
be
there
like,
was just like the work ethic just declined. I'd be like, I would be 0% surprised.
Right? No, it'd be like, oh, okay, yeah. Oh, it makes sense now. Right? That would be the reaction. So with John, the biggest things to me are, and one of the reasons I am maybe more bullish than you on it, even though he ticked 4 or 5 boxes, would be A, he knows what he's getting into. Not just from a roster rebuild, but he knows what college basketball is now or knows what college athletics are. So for him to even have interest, because he's under no pressure to have interest.
That's true. You know, he's not retired. Being, he's millions right? rich. He actually still lives in Washtenaw County, by the way.
Right? So he's not under any pressure to be interested. So the fact that he would be interested or could potentially be interested to me says a lot about that, answers a couple of the bigger hurdles for me as far as like him being a potential candidate is just having interest, because he's under no obligation to want to get into this. And but is it just for allegiance does he feel almost obligated, you know, to kind of refix what he put together, you know?
I bet it's more than just.
I think so too.
He's a competitive guy. I think he felt his career ended a couple years early. Sure. I think he's at peace. Like if he never coaches again, I don't think he would like eat him up. But
right.
I think he feels he still has more in the tank.
Sure.
I think he even said as much last June. I think Alejandro was actually there and got to ask him a couple questions. So I don't think it would be under obligation, but I do kind of wonder, and then we got to move on to the other candidates, but I do kind of wonder, like, what happens if he hypothetically takes the job, fanfare, great, and then suddenly he realizes, oh, crap, this transfer portal stuff is, like, really, really frustrating, because I think if the portal existed, I you know, not here to name play, I think there's a lot of players who ended up having great careers at Michigan who could have been poached, you know, to go join another team or program. So I do kind of wonder, it's great for him to know what's going on, but recruiting, was never really his strong suit. I think, you know, he connected with the players. There was a lot of love for him, but I don't think he was. I don't know if players felt. I don't know. He was a hard coach. He would coach you very hard.
Okay, which is it's funny because that it's and you're right. It just kind of goes against the public image of him, I guess. Not saying.
Oh,
not
he saying, was extremely nice, but he would coach like you know. How many players that were NBA players would be like, yeah, I got to Michigan, and all of a sudden he's like teaching me how to pass like I'm seven, or teaching me how to pivot like I'm you know in elementary school again. Right.
Yeah, and so he does kind of. He was never a fit in the pros.
He does a little bit more of that break you down than build you up kind of thing, which the system works because look at the one loss record. But maybe I'm reading too much into it. But I do wonder if you can get away with that as a first year head coach at 70 years old with today's generation of basketball players. Not that it's drastically different than a few years ago. But with the transfer portal, with NIL, I mean, it does kind feel of is, like though, there's right? it's harder to do. And it's one thing if you're Coach K or you're Tom Izzo and you've got like, hey, come look at this trophy case if you got a problem with it. And Beilein would kind of be able to do that, but he'd also be a first-year head coach trying to build relationships with these players that he never recruited, he never you know had a personal relationship with. You know, Beilein – give him credit. I mean, he was a great early identifier of talent. So like by the time Isaiah Livers came to campus, he had known Isaiah Livers for 3 years. And so he'd already been coached, you know, it's a little bit easier when half the locker room or more than half the locker room has already like done this and been like, it sucks. You know, I think about like Derek Walton mentoring Xavier Simpson, Xavier Simpson's freshman year, very difficult. Derek Walton could have with the whole time was kind of like, it sucks, but you're going to be great. You're going to be a legend. You're going to like, you know, be a part of this. And sure enough, like what the next year he was leading Michigan to a championship game as the point guard. So
what goes back to culture then?
I think that would be my biggest concern is sure. can what worked for Beilein in year 10,
sure.
6 years ago, work for him in year one now,
but
70, but I'm a little skeptical,
but does it have to, it, you know, that's the I think whoever takes this though, I don't think anybody is, And that's actually kind of, to me, maybe one of the other pluses about Beilein is there's not one rational, we'll say rational because they're out there somewhere, but there's not one rational person who's expecting year one, like is going to expect a ton right away, right? So he, in a way, would almost have, I mean, honestly, he'd almost have a similar leash to what he had when he first came in, I almost feel like. I mean, we're, again, like we said.
Yeah,
we said,
except he would have the built-in familiarity, so you would argue his seat would stay, people would trust him a lot more than they did. Oh,
dude, he's got to already be, I know Michigan's pretty stingy about statues, but I mean, just theoretically, just in the...
I think I very much could see John Beilein court at Chrysler Center.
Right? I mean, it's like, so he's, it's, I think he's... beyond like a potential tarnishing of the legacy, I guess. It kind of reminds me, honestly, it kind of reminds me of Iserman being the general manager right now for the Wings, where it's like, it looks like it's going to work long term. I mean, yeah, they've sucked lately, but either way, like the last couple weeks, but still, it's one of those things where it's like, he's so revered. In a lot of ways, if he, let's just say he was the guy, I feel like there'd be a lot of people out there who would really just be like, there'd be so, almost like an admiration for wanting for the desire to come back and want to try to fix, you know, the thing. Sorry, I know we've been on Beilein a while, but I think it's worth
one question.
About, so.
One question: if you want to hire John Beilein and you're Michigan athletic director, what are you doing? Are you like making him bring in like a very proven assistant, like a DeAndre Haynes?
Luke Yaklich, who just got let go at
Marquette. Yeah, but someone who you're thinking, okay, in 3 years, because of Beilein's age, in two or three years, this guy could step in and be head coach. Like, are you, if you're in Michigan's athletic director's shoes, are you keeping an eye on that, or are you just saying, hey, Beilein, let's hear your plan, and if we like the plan, we'll hire you? Are you thinking about, like, I always feel like the head coaching waiting, what percentage of the time does it actually work out? It feels like a low percentage, but is that part of your conviction in this Beeline take two idea?
I think so.
Okay.
Just to be pert. Yeah, no, sorry. No, but I think so. I mean, I to be honest, yeah. I think so for sure.
DeAndre Haynes, by the way, former Michigan assistant. I believe he's at
Marquette. Do you surround him with dogs, right? Isn't that what, is that what you say, surround him with some dogs? You know, I mean, you know, Michigan's got enough. Again, we talked about, this was the one thing we talked about before we got on, was Michigan theoretically should have more money to throw around with Jim being gone and Sharon being the head coach, right?
Coaching pool is smaller. Wonder though, like, here's my thing, Steve. We're getting off track here, but
no, we're fine, dude.
But basketball, it just doesn't have a huge booster culture at Michigan. Like, I remember when Beeline was on the quote unquote hot seat, because I never felt like it was a hot seat in 2017, right before, you know, when they were kind of losing and they didn't look like they were going to make the tournament. And I kind of asked around a little bit, and they're like, honestly, basketball coaches get a much longer leash here because no one's lining up to pay the buyout. And, you know, the boosters don't really, not that boosters don't care about basketball. That's not a fair generalization, but I don't think as many boosters or people who contribute to the athletic department care as much. Like football, yeah, if you go 2-10, you know, congrats, you're getting a nice buyout because they're getting rid of you in a heartbeat. You know, that's a lot of boosters' source of like pride and everything and their whole alumni passion. Basketball is like kind of like the side dish in some ways. Like it's just so in terms of money, I mean, they'll have more money to throw around. I am curious if they do. Like, do they throw their more money around or do they?
Right, that's the question. Know. Yeah, but what do you – I mean, okay, what do you – then you get into, like, is it a business? Like, yeah, do you sit on the extra? You know, do you still, you know, pay a guy what you consider market value and sit on the, you know, whatever you're not paying Jim anymore? You know, what's Sharon making, like, half? Of what Jim made,
right? Or do you tell Booster? I mean, if I were an athletic director, I would tell Boosters, "Hey, go find an NIL collective." You didn't hear it from me, but that's a really good way to win a championship.
Right? No, but, I think if you're Michigan and you're well, the boogeyman Ward, you know, I just don't think money should be an issue in this search. Right.
No, I mean, maybe you don't throw $8 million at someone.
Yes.
But
yes. Depending on who, under depending
five,
on who you end up
I don't
with,
think you should
right?
be. Yeah. Anything under $5 million a year, I don't think you should be like, oh, I don't know if we can swing that. Like you can swing that.
Yeah. No, you don't want to.
That's
be
where
the
like
Yankees.
Tony Bennett's making 4.1. You call Tony Bennett. You know, you pay commensurate to experience, but you don't. You don't need to penny pinch here.
Yes, don't let it be the deciding factor.
And frankly, Michigan fans deserve more than penny pinching. I mean, this is
yes, I agree.
Gosh, they deserve much, much better than
hey man,
second fiddle or 8-24, whatever.
Yeah,
you know, I think about some of the other like schools in the SEC who for a long time just had like doormat basketball programs. It's like no, Michigan. Michigan fans take a lot of pride in rooting for every sport. Now it doesn't always show in attendance for basketball, but like there isn't another program in the country that I think has massive support for as many sports as Michigan does. Oklahoma probably is actually one now that I think about it, and Florida, UNC, but they're Michigan's
and,
right in
and,
that mix
and,
of
yeah, and Notre Dame and Ohio State yeah. and yeah, no,
but I do think
I agree.
I
know
Michigan
what you're saying.
Can like I don't know. Michigan fans deserve a good basketball program. And there's a lot of coaches out there. And on that note, I will make us stop talking about Beeline. If it becomes more of a thing, we can talk about it some more. Because the elephant in the room is Beeline kind of spurned Ward Manuel a few years ago. You know, he left at a bad time. He didn't give Ward. I mean, there's some he said, she said reporting about, you know, how it all went down. But I can see where Ward Manuel is not thrilled with how that went down, and he probably didn't, he didn't burn the bridge, but he probably didn't like keep chatting it up with Beilein throughout the years. So, I wouldn't be surprised if Beilein would have some mending to do there. But in terms of other candidates, candidate who makes the most sense, Steve, you want to go first?
Is that because you can't? You're still trying to figure out who your pick would be, or
no? I've got my pick. I want to pull up the notes that I have on him.
Makes so I'll most, go first. Yeah, go ahead. Sorry, I wasn't trying to crap.
There's
on you.
a lot of candidates. I know Dusty May is getting a lot of. He's on every hot board. I think the hot boards that are not really thinking too much about buyouts are like Shaka Smart, TJ Oh from Iowa State. But I think a coach that guess maybe I'm missing something.
I think I know what you're going to say. Go ahead, do it.
But Anthony Grant from Dayton, I think he checks every box. You know, he's been successful. He's coached in high major basketball. He didn't have a great tenure at Alabama. But he was there for several years. You know, he's been extremely successful at Dayton. He has connections in the Midwest. I think he's still, he was an assistant coach at Florida when they won the national championship. His salary is $1.6 million. I guess to me, he's not quite first call territory just because he isn't quite as proven in terms of winning championships. But man, I feel like that's a very realistic, attainable coaching candidate who checks a lot of the boxes that I would want checked. Maybe I'll dig in more and find out something or whatever, but like, I feel like that he makes a ton of sense. Anthony Grant out of Dayton. He's got a lot of years as a head coach. Yeah. That would be mine. I don't have a ton else. I mean, what's so fascinating is I think there's a lot of people who have differing views of where Michigan is as a program. Are they a top 10 job? Probably not. Are they top 15? Maybe. Are they? But then there's like people who are facetious about the recruiting and are like, this is like a bottom barrel Big 10 job, things like that. I don't agree with that necessarily. I think they're closer to top 20, but I don't know. When I looked over, started to put together a little note card for Anthony Grant, I came away pretty impressed with his resume and what he's done at Dayton. And I think a lot of what he's successful at would translate to Michigan. Steve, your thoughts either on Grant or another realistic candidate who makes sense?
So I like the Anthony Grant pick. One question for you, though. If the buyout, the massive buyout, wasn't an issue, would TJO be, would he be that guy for you? No.
He'd be in the running for sure. No, he'd be in the running
okay.
for sure.
Well,
I don't know a ton about him.
Sure. I just, I know.
He does check a lot of the boxes that I would have.
Sure.
I think. But yeah. What is his buyout?
It's like 17 million? Like 17 million or something. Like, I don't know if Iowa State like does their homework. I don't know. Like, is Matt Campbell's buyout big in football? Which imagine if Michigan had hired Matt Campbell after the COVID season. But anyway, yeah, Grant's a good choice. I've gone back and forth. So I also don't know who qualifies. Like, there's, because my number one guy might almost kind of fit the first phone call thing, just because he's had major success where he's at right now. But I do think, in remembering old stuff about the Michigan job being sort of a ultimate goal for a guy like Shaka Smart, would be, feel like Michigan again, does he want to leave what he's turned into a great situation at Marquette? I don't know if they won last night. I was actually watching some of that game.
It's an interesting dynamic because I would argue Michigan should
easily be able to
pay him more,
right?
And like, maybe should, provide yes. more resources. He did not. I don't know if he had a good time at Texas.
And
his tenure was not as bad as people
yes.
thought it was. But that's part of the problem.
Yes.
Is he actually like? Had some success in Austin, but he was just like, he became this pariah
Yep.
And I kind of wonder if part of him's like, you know what, Big East school, major metropolitan area, you know, as long as DePaul's bad, I can clean up the Chicagoland recruit. You know, it's just,
right.
I think there's a part of him is like, hey, a basketball school that loves me is better than a football school that's not a big fan of me.
So the one thing though, and I can't remember, I can't recall where Texas basketball was before they hired him. But again, I actually think in some ways that long leash almost makes Michigan more attractive, right? I don't think it's like a situation for a guy like Smart where it's like that anyone's going to, even if it, you know, they hire him, you're like, oh, they just hired one of the best coaches in the country. Again, you have your nut jobs, but like regular people are not going to be like, well, they need to win now. So he, you know, being second fiddle and being at a big football school, I don't necessarily think would be the major detractor for a guy in that position, especially, and again, knowing that Michigan almost assuredly, I mean, there's no way they're going to get outbid by Marquette, right? It would just come down to, you know, is he more comfortable? He won big at VCU. Like you said, he had success at Texas, maybe not to the level that, again, a big time school like Texas would expect, but now he's having major success at another, I don't want to say niche, like school, basketball school, but kind of. Marquette probably really is a niche basketball school.
I don't even know if they have
football. Right, I don't think they have. Like, actually, after I said it, I was like,
I don't remember watching
Marquette football, but.
I do think Smart's getting paid healthy.
Pretty good money there.
He's getting power five money there. I don't think it's technically available.
But Michigan, if that's not a, I don't think money would be the reason Michigan would lose out on a situation like that. If they did, that'd be surprising, I guess. Even again, like we're just talking about Marquette, not like they're funneling money to their other sports programs, but I don't know. So so to get back on track, he would be my number one. Other guy would be, and there's one little caveat though, after a reading, and I actually am in agreement with Brian Cook at MGO blog with Medved from Colorado State.
Yep. Nico Medved. Yep.
Is another guy who I think would be who kind of fits that mold of an up and comer, but somebody who's been on that path for a while, right? Not just a flash in the pan type guy, has an established system that feels like it works at the college level. The only thing is though, and I actually did this after I saw, he was already going to be my pick, but I saw Brian did the write-up. So I looked up Medved, literally, this sounds so amateur, on Wiki. His departure from Drake sounded kind of weird. I was like, he just like left and they only had like 5 scholarship players like after he left. I was like, I don't know if that's like kind of a weird, feels like that, like if, I'm imagining if he's in an interview that he would be asked like that, about that situation, like how he left Drake, you know, because he was under Tim Miles, before Miles got hired at Nebraska and went back to Colorado State. But the whole situation at Drake seemed kind of weird. But that being, even without that, like he also, you know, Colorado State, a situation where there's only so far that you can go at a place like that, right? But he's been there long enough where he's had sustained success, a good offensive mind, you know, established system. And then obviously any guy who's currently coaching in college basketball understands this current scenario, the current atmosphere, the current situation. So anybody who's willing to stay in the college game, you know, might be a plus. That would be the other guy. But I'm also with you on Grant, though, too. I think he's, you know, top right up there with those, with Medved. And then again, like I said, the other guy. So, yeah, those would be the realistic, you know, type guys. I just,
sure. Yeah,
I don't know, dude. What do you think? I mean, I just kind of feel like Beeline's gonna, I feel like he's coming back. If, like, this
Really?
is where it's going to
Okay.
go. I just, the fact.
I'll be
Let's see.
honest. I think if
We're
it was
not.
another athletic director, I think it would be.
Okay. You think it's a war? Oh, boy. Don't. No, wait, wait. No,
Well.
no, no, wait, wait. No, let's not do that.
Not that like Ward is like had got this out for Beilein, but like I think if I were an athletic director in the shoes when Beilein left, like and it kind of blew up in my face like that, I'd be kind of
Sure,
annoyed too. Like
sure.
I
But
guess
he, but
Beilein's gonna
he.
have to probably, if he wants this job, he's probably gonna have to like
Apologize.
not
Bend the knee. Bend the knee.
no. Just
No,
like
I know. I know. I'm
explain
kidding.
they're gonna have to be on the
Yeah,
same page. 'Cause I think, you know, there's some misinterpretation or not misinterpreted, there's some varying accounts of, I guess, how it went down, what transpired, and so I don't know. I think if I'm Beilein's, I know he doesn't do an agent, but if I'm Beilein's agent, I'm saying, hey, you gotta make sure you say the right things in this phone call with Ward, just to make sure.
okay, so my thing is the fact, and again, we're not stupid. You see John Bacon and Brendan Quinn from the Athletic, like both, we know he's at least interested, right? He's at least
Yes.
thinking
Here we
about
are on
it.
Beilein again. Man, we
No,
talked.
but no, but dude, I say I think that's I
Yeah.
kind of think that's where this is going because it's also, again,
Huh, okay.
if you're Ward, what's the risk? To me, it's almost a no-lose situation. It'll be revered like crazy if they hire him. There's not one dude, I'm sorry, and again, we've analyzed the hell out of it, but like at the end of the day, if that's where they go, there are going to be the naysayers are going to be minimal, especially like even the nut jobs will be like a little bit quiet, right? With John, if Beilein was the guy. So, you know, I do kind of feel like that's where it's sort of heading. And, again, we'll see, but I just, again, to
Sure.
see, to even see, again, I'm still of the school. I never had the pleasure of having him as a professor because I didn't go that route. But when, to me, still, when John Bacon tweets something, I always pay attention. And then Brendan's a great reporter. But to just, you, it's clear that John is interested in the job, or at least, you know, wants Michigan to know. I guess that he's interested. Again, you said he still lives in Washtenaw County. He could just drive over, you know, and knock on the door. But
Yeah. And I have to imagine Michigan's not like ignoring his calls.
they can't, like,
Right?
there, and there's no way they should, right? I mean, you
No,
have to at least
exactly. Yeah.
listen. So again, sorry to go back.
No, you're good.
Feels like a Beilein pod, but just I just do feel like. I do feel like that might at least be the initial direction this goes. And if it works out or not, then yes. Then again, maybe the white whale stuff. And then maybe they end up, you know, as far as the guys that fit the current game, I'm with you. I like Anthony Grant. I like Medved. I like Tony Bennett, if possible. If they pick TJO, if they can,
Sure.
like, there are, like you said, there are guys out there.
Dusty May, any thoughts? I know
Oh,
he's just a name that gets mentioned a lot.
isn't the problem with him though? Isn't he a big Indiana guy? Right? And so Mike
Yes.
Woodson kind of sucks. So like if Indiana stinks again next season and they
Oh, you
let him
think he's holding
go,
out?
I
Okay.
mean, it seems like he would
Michigan
be the
also probably
guy,
is coming in late for him.
right?
Like I don't know exactly where Louisville and Ohio State and
True.
other
True.
schools are. There's a lot of high major jobs, and there's going to be others, I think,
That's
that will open
true.
up too. So I think,
Because we didn't even mention Mick Cronin,
yes, UCLA guy from
right?
Cincinnati feels like
Who
he's putting out
Louisville?
feelers that he wants to
Yeah.
go back to the Midwest.
Yeah. You know, well, there you go. But Louisville might be the play
Yeah.
there, right? I mean, that's right across the bridge from Cincinnati. So,
So give
but
me just to
no,
close this up. Oh, go ahead.
yeah. No. I'm saying, like, I actually didn't even think about that there are other,
Yeah.
like, decent jobs
I
out there.
will
Yeah.
say, I think everyone we've mentioned, I don't think Michigan would I don't know. Ohio State and Louisville have perks over Michigan in certain ways, but I don't think anyone who's interested in Michigan, I think there is like I think Michigan's kind of a niche, like I don't know how to phrase it. I
You
don't
don't
think
think
it's like direct
Ohio,
head
like,
to head with Ohio State. Like I think the candidates
really?
outside
Okay.
of Dusty May, maybe Grant actually,
Sure.
but don't forget Ohio State also, their interim coach was amazing.
So that was,
Because
I wondered if they would, but it just doesn't seem very Ohio State
should Michigan hire him?
right. Yeah, no. Yeah. Well, what was the thing? He had more conference wins than, yeah, we don't need to
Then
go back
Juwan,
there, but yeah,
he
no,
had twice as many.
but it just doesn't feel very Ohio State
Yeah.
to promote within, even with a guy who has what deep connections, Diebler. I mean, that's like as Ohio as it gets, right? But
I
still
think my
just doesn't.
hesitation with, yeah. And also my hesitation with Dusty May, only one job. Not that
That
you need to
and
have
I knew
moved
that's
around,
that was
but.
actually one of the reasons I didn't bring, because I knew that was one of your, and I think it's a good, like, it's a good sticking point is that, yeah, he's
I
only,
mean,
it's been one spot. He
he
may
did lead
be.
Florida Atlantic to the Final Four. And then the next year,
I
they
don't know about
moved
that.
into the AAC, which granted is not quite the AAC of last year, but
Who
they went
coached
four.
George Mason when they won the, when they went to the Final Four? Like, what, you know, it's like,
I don't
again, the
know.
tournament's such a, and I'm not trying to downplay, but the
No,
tournament
I
is
think it's
just
a fair
such
point.
a.
That would, and like, I think about, well, here's another candidate that's been brought up around Michigan. And I don't think maybe it would work, but like Porter Moser, you talk about like leading a mid-major to a Final Four, led Loyola Chicago to the Final Four. I don't think he's particularly shined at Oklahoma.
I was going
And
to
maybe
say
that's
that,
just
well,
like a
like,
weird fit for a
but
number of
that's
reasons.
right. Well, no, but what he was kind of one of the guys when Beilein left, though, because
Yeah.
Midwest, right?
Yep.
So,
So I
but
think
yeah, it's funny
sometimes
though,
you do
the
have to
percent.
figure out what's going to
Sorry.
translate. And that's why I think like a Dayton or a Power Five, I think like a high major or very serious basketball program that is used, like you need a guy who's used to crowded press conferences, who's used to fan bases having all sorts of crazy opinions. I think you need someone who's used to a little bit of that frenzy. Because it is different. You're coaching a higher caliber of player. You're dealing with a bigger fan base. You're dealing with more media scrutiny. Like if you lose three straight games, there's gonna be a is such and such on the hot seat thread. It's just crazy. Like Dusty May or Porter Moser, they never had to deal with that at their other schools. So it's that's why I'm a little bit more inclined to think, okay, high major experience valuable. Multiple head coaching stops to show that it wasn't just one particular recruiting class that worked out or whatever, also valuable. That said, to close up with our dark horse candidates, guys who maybe aren't leading the hot seat list.
It's like a 2 hour podcast, dude. I love
I
it. No,
know, I know.
it's been
Well, you
good.
know
No,
what?
it's
We're
been
due.
good. It's
We
worth it. The
could have.
basketball program deserves more than we've given. We failed the basketball program with our lack of
Yes.
podcasts. No, I'm well, no, we don't fail, but you know what I mean.
No, we have no flaws. But yeah, this is an opportunity for us to give it to our. So real quick, the dark horse candidate, my even though I just made this whole big speech about how a candidate such as this might not be the first choice, but very impressed
Give me
by
John Beilein.
no,
I'm kidding. I know,
Amir
I'm
Abdul
kidding.
Rahim, Sharif's brother, coaching at South Florida. Had a great turnaround job at Kennesaw State. I don't know if he's interested. I don't know if he's holding out for other jobs. I mean, he's only been at South Florida for 1 year, but it was a really good year. But I don't know. He almost seemed, we talk about up and comer. I mean, he almost seems like a
Like
prodigy.
a
Like he just,
skyrocket, like he's skyrocket, yeah, like the
yeah. Like
comet.
sometimes I
Like a
think about
comet. Yeah.
if you go back and look at like Brad Underwood, his record before he got to Oklahoma State, which he's been very good at. Oklahoma State and Illinois too, but it's like, yeah, some guys just get it. Like they don't need like a 3 year build. They just like know how to coach basketball. And Amir Abdul Rahim, I mean, just very impressed by his resume. No idea where he would rank on Michigan's list,
Right.
but if I'm
No,
picking someone who's like outside the top eight,
I think we're in
who
agreement,
could
and we're in
climb in,
agreement too.
yeah.
I'm there. I'm on board with that. Also, because my brother still has a Sharif Abdur-Rahim Grizzlies jersey. So that would be the other reason why I would big old Grizzly, a big Vancouver Grizzlies guy. Has the big country and a Sharif Abdur-Rahim jersey. So
he's from Atlanta, but I will say, you know, he coached at Kennesaw State and then 1 year at South Florida, but he was an assistant under Tom Crean at Georgia. And I think Tom Crean, you know, due to his in-laws, has at least some affinity toward Michigan. And then he was also an assistant for several years at Texas A&M. So I think, he hasn't been a head coach at a power program, but I don't think he would be walking in blind to what a power conference program needs to do to be successful. So
Tom Crean would be a guy who would not steer Michigan wrong if they ever.
I don't know. I'm just saying, like, he could give an endorsement of Michigan.
Right. That's what I mean. That's what I meant, though, is like, yeah, if Michigan actually called him and said, you think he's ready? Like, I don't think he would be like, or do maybe you do. He'd be like, yes, even if he really wasn't ready. So because of that, because of the allegiance affiliation, like, as you mentioned before. So
that's true. I was actually thinking of it the other way, where Green could be like, hey, Michigan's not that bad. You know, don't overthink what happened to Juwan. Like,
right.
Like, I think he could sell. I don't know. Michigan, I don't know enough about him. I don't know enough about what his priorities are, what he wants. But, you know, if I'm looking at dark horse candidates who have very intriguing resumes where I'm impressed, and if I were Michigan, I would, you know, kind of pencil them in as like, okay, if these four or five guys say no, you know, let's give this guy a call. He would be at the top of my dark horse candidates list. Anyone else that, you know, in terms of the dark horse candidate that you would be keeping an eye on?
So John Beilein is a guy.
Get out of here.
Dude, come on, man. It's been too long. This was a fun pod to record. Fun in the face of, like I said, though, the one thing which we actually didn't really touch on, maybe I'll touch on real quick, is how much this all stinks. You know, I feel for Juwan and the family. I remember the presser when he came in and the early success. It was like, this felt like it was really going to work out, you know, and being a former player and a guy who obviously, you know, he's one thing that's clear about him, wears his emotions on his sleeve, right? And you could tell how much excitement and passion he had when he took the job, and to kind of see it, you know, go the, like for this to all kind of transpire, just really just kind of stinks on every level. So, you know, for Michigan's benefit, obviously hope they make the right hire, but also hope Juwan, you know, again, like we've talked about literally everything, but do think maybe he's a better fit for the pro game in some capacity, maybe get back into being an assistant coach somewhere and then work his way into a head job in the pros. You know, but just, it does, it just kind of stinks. You know, I'm big on remembering the beginnings of stuff. You know, I was like, remember Jim Spresser when he first came in, like the same thing where it was like very similar, a lot of parallels there, you know, of like the, and actually kind of similar in their initial, like, remembrance as a player. You know, Jim, not a guy as a player who would be on like the Mount Rushmore of Michigan football players, you know, just as far as what he did as a player. Same thing with Juwan, who was like another, like, All-American level, like a great player, but not your Chris Webber, Kazee Russell, like Trey Burke type deal. You know, similar thing, though, where it's like, turned into a great coach, comes home, just feels, it felt totally right. You know, it's like, I actually, like, anybody who tries to, wants to go back and criticize the initial hiring is stupid, because not only, I mean, he had a great pro resume, was actually what, after his, what, first and second year, there was like pro teams were considered, like, I want to say Minnesota, right?
Yeah, he turned down pro. I don't know if Minnesota was before.
I thought they were one of them.
There were a few though, and if he had like wanted to go coach the NBA
easily,
absolutely, someone would have hired him, and that's, you know, I will say, I mean, that's just a very unfortunate. I can't imagine what he went through now, because like he stayed because one, his sons were on the team, but two, he really wanted to and truly believed he could win a national championship at Michigan, and for 2 years it felt extremely possible. A lot of the stuff was controllable. I think there were things that he could have done differently, especially, you know, defense late game. I think the recruiting that wasn't just the five-star guys, you know, like the rounding out your roster, I guess would be the best phrase to use. But there were some things that were out of his control. I mean, objectively speaking, if they get Terrence Shannon, they probably make the tournament last year. And then does Hunter leave? You know, and then this year, I think there were some other things that were out of his control. I mean, the heart procedure was very like it was no joke. It wasn't just like some, you know, it was very legitimate adverse situation to not be able to. I don't think he was even in the facilities for 2 months.
Right. Probably unfair. Probably unfair that we are just bringing that up. Right.
I acknowledge that, but yeah, I mean, it was a genuine setback, and then you factor in star point guard has like a weird academic, because it wasn't just like he took the day off those days. Like he wasn't practicing in the game prep for those games, so his practice schedule was wacky. And the team, we talked about how few guards they have. I mean, that was a big setback. They had injuries all year. Olivier Kamwa was probably the most significant, but it seemed like that availability report seemed like guys were having like Trey Jackson, didn't he have like a broken nose at one point? Jace Howard had like a stress fracture thing. There were all sorts of things going on. So I'm sympathetic. I don't think between the roster construction and the adversity this year, I don't think the seat would have been hot had he just not made the tournament. Maybe some fans would have, but I don't think I would have been like, this is not working. It's time to move on. But 8-24, I mean, that's a separate level. Like I think football teams can have down years. They can have 6-6 seasons or 5-7 seasons. Even Brian Kelly had a 4-8 season, and Mark D'Antonio had, you know, his kind of lost season. It happens, but 8-24 to me, football equivalent of 1-11. So, I think at that point, Michigan was right to kind of say, okay, this is not working. This is 3 years of decline. And this decline was too far. You know, it's time for someone else to step in. That's my personal view. But I do totally see eye to eye with what you're saying. I mean, it's crazy to think like 3 years ago his approval rating was probably like, 99% among Michigan fans. And now, I mean, by you know, Thursday, it was probably down to like 3%. So, yeah, we'll see what happens next for him, and obviously we'll see what happens next for Michigan. They've got a true coaching search. You know, the football one was not quite as much of a true coaching search. It took about negative 3 months for them to figure out who their next head coach would be. Basketball, it could go in a lot of different directions. There's a lot of names we didn't mention. Be sure to check it all out over at the michiganinsider.com, michigan.247sports.com. I've been working more on like kind of the what happened and like the big picture stuff for Michigan, but Sam has got a hot board. I'm sure he'll have another one in the coming days as we start to sense who Michigan is talking to. Yeah, it could be. I genuinely think there's like 15 names who, like, if you told me a week from now Michigan will have picked this, and I would be like, okay, you know, it's just a very wide-ranging coaching search. And be sure to check out the michiganinsider.com, michigan.247sports.com for all of the latest on the coaching search. And once they do hire a coach, we'll obviously have a reaction. We named a lot of names. It could be someone else. I think we're fully aware of that. But for Steve Lorenz, I'm Zach Shaw. This has been the Wolverine 24/7 podcast. We'll see you next time.